You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Jada Lucas.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, April 9th, 2018.
With chemotherapy, there's a very common phenomenon called chemo brain. And chemo brain, it just makes you so foggy.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with James Clausen about his work improving the mobility of cancer patients. That's coming up on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Stephen Hale believes food brings people together and knowing where your food comes from is empowering. Hale speaks with Activate's Lucy Shake about his volunteerism in the Bloomington Community Orchard. That's coming up later in the program. But first, your daily headlines.
Today is the deadline to register for vote to vote in the May 8th Indiana primary. Voters can register online or check their voter registration at indianavoters.com. To register online, an Indiana resident needs a state-issued ID, like a driver's license. Residents can register online until midnight tonight. Voters don't need an ID to simply check their voter registration. Monroe County voters can also register in person at the Johnson Hardware Building at 401 West 7th Street in downtown Bloomington. In-person registration closed at 4 p.m. today. The May 8th primary will determine what names are on Indiana's ballot in the general election on November 6th. Early voting for the primary begins tomorrow.
National attention has been focused on Indiana's primary season, with three Republican candidates vying for the nomination to run against incumbent Democratic U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly. Republican Congressman Todd Rokita and Luke Messer are contending with Jasper businessman Mike Braun for the Republican nomination. Early today, Rokita announced an endorsement by Indiana's Trump-Pence campaign staff. Rokita, Messer, and Braun have all raised over $2 million. Senator Donnelly has raised over $5 million, a substantial portion of that coming from union contributions.
A missing Columbus man has been declared dead after his body was discovered on the Driftwood River early Friday morning, according to the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. 26-year-old Keegan Matlock was last heard from on the morning of Wednesday, April 4th. Matlock had reportedly discussed his plans with family members to go kayaking on either the Driftwood or Flat Rock Rivers near Columbus last Wednesday. Authorities were contacted Thursday morning after he did not return home. Matlock's kayak was found empty on Thursday afternoon. The search was called off that evening due to low light conditions, but resumed early Friday morning. Authorities discovered Matlock's body at 4 p.m. on Friday, 100 yards away from where his kayak was discovered. The Department of Natural Resources advises against anyone canoeing or kayaking on flooded waters. Much of the state is still experiencing flooded conditions following an exceptionally wet February and March.
Both a counselor and the director of Bedford's North Lawrence Career Center have been placed on administrative leave. Director Glenn Wheel and Counselor Kim Magnus were placed on leave last week pending an investigation into, quote, irregularities in vocational program reporting, unquote. The North Lawrence School Board held an emergency meeting to discuss the situation last Wednesday. The meeting was not open to the general public. Steve Fisher, retired superintendent of New Castle Community Schools, has been named interim director. The Career Center serves students from North Lawrence Community Schools, as well as students from Shoals, Mitchell, Orleans, Medora, and Brownstone.
Indiana University will break ground on a new bell tower later this month. The Arthur Metz Carillion will be moved from its current location off 17th Street to the Campus Arboretum just south of 10th Street. A carillion is a medieval-era bell tower, which contains dozens of bells played as a single instrument. IU Communications Director Chuck Carney says the carillion is being moved so it can be restored.
It was built in 1970. It's one of the few carillons of its type. It has 61 bells. It reaches 5 octaves. But the truth of the matter was, it was on an edge of campus, and it was 50 years old and starting to show some weather in the tower. The conditions had taken their toll on the carillon housing, and so something would have to be done to make sure that it was in good structural shape for sure. So as long as that was going to be done, it made a lot of sense to move it to a central place in campus where it will be, which is in the IU Arboretum.
Carney says the university is taking the opportunity to add 4 more bells to the carillon, in effect bumping it up to a grand carillon. The Arthur Metz Carillion will be one of just 30 grand carillions in the world. Carney says the funds to rebuild the carillion will come from the Arthur Metz Foundation and other private funding.
Really, the nature of the university certainly fits with the tradition of the Jacobs School of Music to perform complicated and really unique pieces of music that can only be performed on such an instrument. So it's really something to be thought of, that we could spend our resources on restoring it in a place that was not central to campus and it wouldn't necessarily be heard all that much, or we could let it crumble, which is not a good decision either. And this is something that we think should be shared with a broader community and should be a resource that we can enjoy more easily.
The groundbreaking ceremony for the new carillon will take place Monday, April 23rd, from 4 to 5 p.m. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Jada Lucas. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com. James Clausen bridges the gap between the geek world of computers and the more traditional healthcare field. Fascinated by smart devices as a teenager, he studied human-computer interaction at Georgia Tech University, earning both his master's and PhD there. Hoping to bring his expertise to people on the street, he did postdoc work in Rome, Georgia, developing a mobile machine that helped rural patients cope with and understand breast cancer. Now he's a professor at Indiana University's School of Informatics. He continues to find new ways to gather healthcare data and help patients navigate their way through life-changing physical and psychological events. He joined Michael Glab on last week's Big Talk. Today on Big Talk Extra, he talks about the cancer journey.
This is what the Cancer Journey Project was all about. I was in Rome for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
My first year and a half was interviewing patients, cancer patients, interviewing doctors, interviewing nurses, interviewing caretakers, interviewing cancer navigators to learn about, from the variety of perspectives, what the cancer journey was.
Uh-huh.
Then we had engaged with the healthcare system. We designed a mobile technology, which was an off-the-shelf 7-inch Android tablet. Mm-hmm. And on this tablet, we gave patients a suite of best-in-class technology. So it had a set of communication technologies, it had a set of entertainment technologies, it had a set of healthcare technologies. And included in that set of healthcare technologies were the patients' personal health records.
When you say that, mm-hmm. do you mean that's the same information that the doctor or nurse carries around in the hospital when they come visit you while you're laying in bed?
Yep. The exact same thing.
You have access to it.
We have access to it, and we were putting that in the hands of the patient.
When I was a punk kid myself working mm-hmm. my way through college, I worked in hospitals, and no way did you want the patient to see his or her file.
Absolutely. Well, so that was one of the things. I mean, this project, we worked with the healthcare system, but it was not without its challenges, right? So we're working with doctors and with hospital administrators who were very intent and very interested in locking down these tablets and delivering a very focused consumer experience there where they control all of the information. And we, as researchers, really pushed back hard on that and tried to convince them to give us the freedom and flexibility to deploy an open technology that let the patients download whatever they wanted and search online whenever they wanted and delete whatever pieces of information they wanted.
Not deleting from their official file.
They couldn't delete their records, right? So they couldn't clean out their records, but they could. I mean, we preloaded it with all of these applications. They could delete any of those applications they wanted. Yeah. They could customize the tablet to be whatever they wanted. And that was something that, especially 4 or 5 years ago, was something that hospitals just wouldn't do. And it's still a big fight today in terms of who is in control of your health information. Is it the patient? Is it the hospital? Is it the multiple healthcare providers? Is it the insurance company? We were putting patients first. We were really interested in giving them the ability to customize, to configure, to control their user experience, their experiences with the tablets and the technologies. And we won that battle, which was really fortunate for us. And I think the doctors that we worked with were rewarded by that because the patients enabled the patients to take ownership over these devices we were giving them. So we were giving them these 7-inch Android tablets. We were working in rural Georgia. We had the ability to say any patient who is diagnosed with breast cancer within the healthcare system is eligible to participate in our research. And if you choose to participate in our research, we'll give you these technologies that could potentially assist and support you. And we are going to be collecting your usage data. So how are you using it? Because we wanted to learn about what was useful and what wasn't. We had, over the course of the project, I believe over 100 patients choose to engage in our research. And we were logging all of their interactions with it. And then we were following up with them. So we would interview them 1 month after diagnosis, 3 months after diagnosis, 6 months, a year, 18 months, 2 years. And at each of these touch points, each of these times, we would talk to them about, just have them tell us about their cancer journey. What were the challenges they were having? What was going on with their lives? How are they coping and dealing? And what was working and what wasn't working? What did we give them that was broken? How are we making things harder? Because all of that information was useful for us to how can we improve this experience. And that was one of the things that, I mean, you hear me saying that people were being given technology in exchange for their data. And a lot of people get very uncomfortable about that.
Especially nowadays.
Especially nowadays. One of the things that was really nice about it was there was an altruistic feel about it, right? These patients were choosing to give us access to their usage data so that we could learn how to improve this experience for people who are coming after them, right? So how can we learn from your experiences to improve these technologies mm-hmm. and the user experience for those who come after you? And folks felt comfortable making that trade. We were very explicit what we were going to use that data for, how we were collecting the data, what types of data we were collecting. We went through all of our university in informed consent processes, and we had over 100 patients who engaged in our research and gave us mountains of valuable data. We developed extensive relationships because we would sit down with these folks for hours at a time and just talk about their lives and the challenges they were having in their lives and what was going on from a cancer perspective, from a non-cancer perspective, and trying to see what opportunities there were for us to design technologies to support them. All the while, they were using our technologies on a daily basis to answer questions, to support each other, to as a communication tool. We had folks who would record questions they would have for their doctors and then bring them in and play them back for their doctors. We had folks who would ask their doctors if they could record their conversations so that later on they could come back and review the conversations that they had.
Because you forget.
One of the things that happens so commonly with cancer is when you are engaged in with chemotherapy, there's a very common phenomenon called chemo brain, and chemo brain, it just makes you so foggy. It makes things so challenging to kind of keep things together, and it's just one of the side effects of having chemotherapy. As you might know, I know that you were a cancer survivor yourself,
you forget everything.
You forget everything. It's a huge challenge.
You forget why you walked into the room.
And if you have a doctor who's an expert on your health telling you things that you need to do to make sure that you are treading the straight and narrow and going down the right course, you want to be able to remember that when you leave the room.
You don't even need chemo brain to forget the things that your doctor has told you on a normal everyday basis.
That is absolutely true. Translating between a doctor and a patient is a huge gulf, right? There's a huge challenge there between what a doctor is saying and what a patient is understanding. And that's one of the ways that our technology came into play as well. We were incredibly fortunate to be working with a nonprofit organization up in Rome, Georgia, that was a set of women who were cancer navigators. And cancer navigation has a long history, starting back in the 70s in Harlem. It came out of this notion that we wanted to get more African-American women to come into the clinic to get treated for cancer because the discrepancies between survivorship rates of white women and black women with breast cancer were huge. And they set up a program to have survivors of breast cancer go out into the community and to start talking to other potential women in the community to educate and inform them about their experiences and to help bring them in. That practice has transformed in a lot of different ways over the past 30 years. The women that we were working with an organization that had two nurse navigators, and they saw their function as the person who holds your hand when the doctor tells you you have cancer and holds your hand throughout that process and says, you can do it. This is what the doctor said. This is what it means. The doctor is with you for 6 minutes, but I'll be with you for the next half hour, and I will walk you from this office down the hall. I'll introduce you to Bertha. Bertha's the person who's going to schedule all of your sessions, and here's where your sessions are. They helped the patients understand the healthcare system. They helped the patients try to understand what the doctor had just said. They helped the patients try to incorporate the advice of the doctor. They were there to act as the translator.
In a sense, they're tour guides.
Oh, they really are. They really are. They are taking you on this journey.
And the journey.
They are doing what they can to help you out in that way.
That was WFHB's Michael Glapp speaking with James Clausen about his work, Bridging the Gap Between Technology and Medicine. To hear a full edition of Glapp's interview with Clausen, go to WFHB's website, wfhb.org, or tune in on Thursday afternoons at 5:30 for Big Talk.
Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference, volunteer.
I am Stephen Hale, and I volunteer with Bloomington Community Orchard. I've been a volunteer there for about 5 years now. I serve on the operations team, as well as being board chair. For me, there is an orchard experience. I describe it as being a connection between people, a place, and growing food. The experience, for me, it's a set of conversations that I have with people. Some people I just meet one time, but people from all kinds of backgrounds, different ages, different cultures, they all have their stories about, we used to grow food in my grandmother's garden, or something that they do in their own home, or something like that that means a lot to them. And as we're turning compost or pulling weeds or doing the other things we do, these stories come out, and it seems to be universal, and it really pulls me in and keeps me coming back. One of the areas where I know that it makes a difference, as well as where I have a lot of fun, is programs with children. And we do things with lotus blossoms, children planting seeds, and then we'll also have tours with children coming around the orchard site. There was a moment a couple of years ago, I'm guessing the children were 7, 8 years old, somewhere in that range. And it was April, maybe going into May, so the blossoms on the apple trees were starting to fall off, but the fruit was just starting. And I could point out, you see this little swelling at the end of the branch? That's going to be an apple. This boy was standing right next to it and was like, no way! And then he stopped talking, and you could almost hear the wheel spinning. And in that moment, he really made the connection, the flower, the pollinating, you know, the birds and bees stuff, and he got it. To me, that's just an example of what we do and what people take away with. There are many ways to be involved with Bloomington Community Orchard. We have weekly, we call them work and learn days. They're 3 hours, either on Saturday afternoons or in the summer, Wednesday evenings. And people can just come out, if you're there for the first time, see what's out there, see what we have going on, and help us get some things done. That's, I think, often how people first get connected. There's just lots of ways for people to get involved, to have an impact with the Orchard organization and with the community. Thanks for listening. I'm Stephen Hale with Bloomington Community Orchard.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with 3 featured volunteer opportunities for the week. Assist visitors at Bloomington Parks and Recreation's second annual Bug Fest at the Hilltop Garden and Nature Center on June 24th. Participants will go on an insect safari, make a craft, and participate in a mealworm race or cricket spitting contest. 2 shifts are available. Or use your expertise to further benefit the Pets Alive nonprofit spay-neuter clinic and join the dedicated and passionate animal lovers from across the community on their board or committees. Board and committee members meet once a month for about an hour. And finally, participate in a Bloomington tradition. The Bloomington Playwrights Project's Arts Fair on the Square on June 17th is celebrating 37 years of bringing visual artists and craftspeople together on the picturesque grounds of the Monroe County Courthouse. Many shifts and assignments are available. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, Jonah Chester, and Andrew McKieran. The Daily Local News is produced in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Big Talk Extra is produced by Michael Glatt.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Our executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Jada Lucas. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
And you can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@WFHB.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at WFHB.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.